You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another great edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, another preview edition of the show as we're talking with different Memphis media members that cover the Grizzlies this year. On the show today, Mark Giannotto, sports columnist for the Commercial Appeal over there, a host of Giannotto and Jeffrey, 2 to 4 every single day on 92.9 ESPN. So if you're not already checking that out, make sure you go and do that. Mark, what's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and talking with us. I want to jump right into it and look back for just a minute on the offseason for the Grizzlies and this new regime, this new front office. Anything that really stood out to you that defined kind of the offseason and this new front office and the way they really went about things, kind of being more proactive than the last one?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the thing that stands out just off the top of my head right now is you look at what's going on with Andre Iguodala right now, where they're holding their ground and not giving in to his demand of wanting to be bought out. They're trying to get more assets. And it's a sign of what they've done all offseason. Like, they've accumulated assets. Like, the very fact that they have Andre Iguodala, they made this proactive move when Golden State needed to dump salary when they were trying to reload, and they already got a first round draft pick out of it, and now they're trying to get more. And that's what really stands out to me, is just how they've really done a nice job. You know, they got some luck in getting the number two pick and getting Ja Morant, but they've used that luck as a launching pad to have a really productive offseason. They've really just turn the page really effectively, it feels like. It's just funny when you think back to, like, December, January, it felt like this team was rudderless. It had no direction. You didn't know, you know, yes, you had Mike and Mark, but where was this team going? And now I think while there's going to be some bumps this year, I think we sort of know where they're going. And that was established this offseason. So that's what just stands out to me, just the pragmatic, strategic moves they made. You know, it's just, you know, it's nothing that, I guess, there's no splashy signing or anything like that. But, I mean, just the assets they accumulated trading Mike Conley, and then using those assets they acquired in trading Mike Conley and getting more assets off of them, like, that's just, that it was really remarkable to watch this front office work this off season. And it's a good sign for the future of the franchise. Even though the immediate future in terms of wins and losses will probably be not so great. You feel comfortable where they're headed. And I don't know if we could have said that 6-8 months ago.
Where do you land on the Andre Iguodala situation? Do you want him to report to camp? Do you want him to play in a game? Do you want them to buy him out? Again, if he reports, it will be the expense of a roster spot. Where do you come down on Andre Iguodala?
If he wants to be a good soldier, then yeah, I'm fine with him coming and being a part of the team for a while and helping these. You know, it'd be nice. If he's not all in, but if he's, like, you know, like I said, a good soldier, he could be helpful to some of these young guys, because this locker room is, I mean, like, Jonas Valanciunas is like the grizzled vet, and he's like 27, 28. Right. I know they have Jay Crowder, and he's not quite 30. Like, having someone like Iguodala could be really helpful for a few months, just in terms of guiding Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. through this process. But if he's not going to be a good soldier, if he has no interest, I would honestly have him stay at home and keep him on the roster till the trade deadline. I would not give in and just buy him out unless he's willing to give a substantial amount of money back. To me, I think even if he doesn't play, let's say he doesn't play till the trade deadline, which would be kind of a dramatic step. Like, let's say the Grizzlies just keep him at home. You're telling me a contender wouldn't want him still? If anything, he's going to avoid injury and avoid putting miles on his treads that are already kind of old. So I think the Grizzlies hold out until the trade deadline if they need to, if they don't get a deal they want. And then, you know, there'll be some there's going to be contenders at the deadline who are going to want to get better once the season starts. I just think they should not give in right now just because Andre Iguodala wants to go play for a contender right away. I think you can get some more out of him, like squeeze some more out of this orange, if you will. Get some more juice out of it. And like, I just don't see, you know, yes, I guess you're going to have to make a tough decision in terms of, you know, you're going to have to cut someone who maybe, you know, cut someone just to keep Andre Iguodala on the roster for the foreseeable future. But I don't know. I'd rather cut a Solomon Hill or Bruno Caboclo and see what I can get for Iguodala later than, you know, buy him out for not that, you know, buy him out at a deal that's more advantageous for Andre Iguodala. That's my thought on it.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of guys, and I want to talk about that a little bit more. They are going to have to cut people no matter what. They have too many guys on the roster, so they're going to have to cut people no matter what. Some guys that are probably candidates. Who do you think some guys that are probably candidates to get waived before the season starts?
Well, I think Ivan Rabb is probably. I don't know. I don't want to say definite because maybe he just lights the world on fire in the preseason, but seems right. Like he is more than likely not going to be on this roster on opening night, given their roster situation. And then, you know, I named the other two, you know, it just depends, you know, Solomon Hill and Bruno Caboclo seem like the next most likely. I think you could throw, it sounds like Josh Jackson, who knows, like, I think it depends what Josh Jackson shows up to training camp. Are we going to, you know, is it going to be the intriguing top five pick from a couple years ago? Or is right. it going to be the troublemaker, you know, don't know where his head's at, Josh Jackson? I think that will determine his future. And then they're going to have to make a decision. Do you want to eat some money and get rid of Solomon Hill, a guy who you're probably not going to really use that much anyways? Or do you want to save money and get rid of a guy like Bruno Caboclo, who, while intriguing, is also 24 and, you know, is a guy you basically picked up off the scrap heap last year.
Right.
I don't think, like, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's going to affect the future of the franchise. I don't think Bruno Caboclo is going to be some star. And I don't think, obviously, Solomon Hill, losing him is going to be a big deal. But there's going to have to be a decision there, I think. To me, it doesn't, like, for this year, whatever they decide in terms of these end of the roster decisions, I guess with Bruno, it's a little more imperative in that if you do think he's a guy who could be a rotation player in a couple years,
right.
You know, maybe you keep him on because of that. But at the same time, it's not like he's a second-year guy. He's been around a while now at this point. And so is he really going to develop into more than what he was at the end of last year? And then obviously Solomon Hill, you know, not a guy who really figures in your future, but he's a guy who you might be able to move at the trade deadline because he has an expiring contract. So my guess would be Rabb and Caboclo go. That would be my guess. They have to cut one more.
Yeah, they have to cut. Yeah, they have to cut three.
They got to cut three. So,
but they also just signed the kid to the exhibit 10, which technically they have to cut him too.
It's going to be interesting, I guess, that last spot on the team, and whether they decide to buy out one of these veterans that they have. Especially particularly Solomon Hill. So that would be my, you know, and then I guess Josh Jackson enters into there. I think a lot of this depends on how Josh Jackson looks in the preseason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation for sure. There are lots of decisions to be made. And Josh Jackson is one of the names that has come up. Other people we've talked to, it's come up kind of increasingly a lot that – not that he deserves it, but it's the same thing. What is his attitude? What is it going to be like when he shows up to camp? Is it going to be, woe with me, I'm here at the Grizzlies, or is it going to be, this is my time to really make something and really show what I can do? So it's an interesting concept. No matter what. Coming up next, we will talk more about expectations. We'll talk more about young players. But first, Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. For just 20% off, go to MackWeldon.com and their promo code LOCK for 20% off. Welcome back to the show, talking with commercial appeal columnist Mark Giannotto. I want to talk about the younger guys on the roster for just a minute. Specifically, Jaren, specifically Ja. What should people expect from those guys this year? Obviously, very young guys. Jaren going from year one to year two, and then obviously Ja coming in and just being a rookie as it is, and a rookie point guard. That is a hard spot in this league. What should people expect this year when they go and watch those two guys?
Yeah, well, with Jaren, it's funny. You look at his numbers. He had, like, if you look at his numbers compared to guys like Kevin Garnett and Anthony Davis and guys like that, he actually had a more productive rookie year than some of those guys did. Right. Back when, like Giannis, he was more productive than all those guys were as rookies. But if you look at those guys, all of them sort of started to show more consistent glimpses of the stars they were going to become in their second year. Like, there was a jump made. And I don't know if Jaren's ever going to be a superstar, if you will. I have some doubts about that. I think he's going to be a really good, really good player for a long time. I don't know if he's ever going to, like, I have my doubts as to whether he's going to be the number one guy on an NBA title contender once he gets to his peak. Now, could I see him being the number two guy? Absolutely. But you want to see him rebound the ball better and just be a little more consistent. Like, he's going to get the ball more. His usage is going to go up. Right. And so you want to see more consistent glimpses of him being a dominant player. And so what that looks like statistically, I'm not sure. But you want to see him continue to be as efficient as he was last year, but with more opportunities, which he's obviously going to get with Mark and Mike gone. And then for Ja Morant, I think you look no further. I know they're slightly different players, but you look no further than what Trae Young did last year. I think that's the ideal scenario for Ja Morant. He's going to take some lumps early because being a point guard in the NBA as a rookie is tough. But right. What you're hoping is over the last half of the year, he's turned a corner and starts to look like, and is giving you those glimpses, if you will, of what he's going to be long term. So with Ja, I feel like you want to see, it's those last 40-30 games where you want to make sure there's a noticeable difference in his play from the end of the year to the beginning of the year. And so, you know, he's going to turn the ball over, he's going to have some rocky moments, but you want to, yeah, it's hard to describe, but maybe just at the end of the year, you want to feel good about the progress he's made. Again, I don't know what that looks like statistically, but just emotionally, you want to go in saying, you know what, this guy got better as the year went on. I think that's what you're hoping for Ja Morant. Whereas with Jaren, I think you want to leave year two going, this guy's good. You know, this guy's really good. Like, not just promising, like this, which is what we came out of last year with. Like, this guy is good.
Yep. Well, with Jaren, and you're right. I mean, in this league, it is difficult for big guys to be number ones. Like, it really just is. Like, if you look around the league, guys that are number ones on teams are most of the time wings are guards, and it's just, and I don't know if that's just the nature of the game these days. Obviously the ball is dominated by guards. They obviously have the ball in their hands more, wings as well, more of the point forward. So it's something with Jaren that it is interesting. Note that, in this league, it is difficult for big guys to ever really be number ones, which is why it's also important for hopefully Ja Morant to be what everybody thinks he should be. He's never played a game before, so we don't know, but what he should be.
Yeah. I will say about Jaren, the thing that's intriguing about him more so, like it feels like what we saw last year is that he's closer to the Anthony Davis, Giannis mold than Kevin Garnett. Like in terms of he can play on the perimeter. He has a skill set taking the ball. Like if he can show that he can consistently be a guy who gets the ball on the wing and is not only a three-point threat, but is a threat, consistent threat to put the ball on the floor, I mean, that takes his trajectory to a whole nother level. And we saw that from time to time last year, but I don't know if I'd say it was something that was part of his skill set, if you will. Right. If he adds that part to his game, then to me, the ceiling raises a little bit for him. So that might be something to keep an eye on as this year wears on.
Yeah, I mean, if he consistently takes guys off the dribble, which is right, he didn't do it consistently last year. It was something that, like, he went
every once in a while he did it, and you'd go, ooh, and that really is what you want. Like, you want more consistent oohs, if you will, from Jaren this year. And that, you never know. Like, that could be very possible because, like the rookie year was really promising. I think it was better than anyone could have ever, if you go back to draft night when he got drafted, even though he missed the last 30 games or whatever it was, that rookie year, I think, went better than anyone could have expected on draft night. And so maybe the second year will go better than anyone could have expected.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and he's so long. I mean, that move for him to get from the perimeter to the basket. And that's the one thing I noticed last year about him when he actually did it. He's so long. Like, his arms are so long. Like, it's insane that he can be in a spot in the paint and really reach around a guy to get a kind of a finger roll in. So it is interesting. If he can do that, if he can add a three-pointer, more consistent three-point shooting to his game, I think that's a totally different player than what we thought we were getting. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's for sure. But then I think a not so minor thing is he does need to rebound better. He's going to have Jonas in there who will help carry that load. But he was averaging, four or five rebounds a game. And you want to see him – I'd like to see him get up to, eight rebounds a game at least. I think he's capable of that. There's no reason he shouldn't be a good rebounder given his length and his athleticism. And I think it's something – long term, the Grizzlies are going to need out of him. Maybe not, not this year necessarily, but long term for the Grizzlies, they're going to need him to be a better rebounder.
I absolutely agree. I want to talk a little bit about Tyus Jones. They obviously they brought Tyus Jones here in favor of DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright obviously went to the Mavs. Is Tyus Jones someone that you think they could play with Ja Morant? There was a lot of talk about that when he signed there. Are you a believer in Tyus Jones and Ja Morant being able to be on the floor together consistently?
I don't know, because it just honestly, I think it depends on what type of three-point shooter Ja Morant is in the NBA.
Right.
Because if Ja Morant is the three-point shooter he was at Murray State, which was fine, but not like an elite three-point shooter, like to not have an elite three-point shooter at your two guard spots strikes me as not something you want to do a lot, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Plus, you add on the fact that it would be a undersized backcourt. Even though Ja Morant has decent size at like 6'3", or 6'2", or 6'3", and Tyus Jones is like 6'1", I'm willing to, obviously they saw something in that, they believe that Tyus Jones can play with him. And you add on the fact that, the two guard position is kind of, it feels very fluid going into the preseason for the Grizzlies. So I'm willing to see how it works. I mean, they did play, you go back to last year and it was a different coach,
but they played Shelvin Mack and Mike Conley together quite a bit.
Right.
And I, you know, Mike Conley, I think at this point in his career was a better 3-point shooter than John Morant. And so that's the question. Cause Tyus Jones, again, it feels like Tyus and Ja are similar in the fact that they're both, you know, great at creating for others. I don't know, you know, defensively, Tyus is much better than Ja. And then 3-point shooting wise, neither of them are terrible 3-point shooters, but statistically it appears they're not great 3-point shooters. Yeah. So, I could see some, I'm certainly open to the idea of them playing together, but I think Tyus Jones's value is in the fact that, you know, John Morant's not going to have to play 35, 40 minutes a game. They're not going to need him. They're not going to need Ja Morant to be all world every night for this team to just have creators. Like Tyus Jones gives them another creator off the bench. And so if Tyus Jones is playing 25 minutes a night and Ja Morant is playing around the same or 30 minutes a night,
right,
you know, obviously some of that will be together. But I also think it means you can stagger the two of them, and it takes some of the load off of Ja Morant.
No, I think you're right. The offense of Ja Morant will be very important to be able to that combination. You know, but obviously Tyus Jones is not an offensive player at all. That's not really his skill set. He'll have to do it more, but it's not his skill set. And what Ja Morant's able to do will be very important to that combination. Last person I want to talk about, Brandon Clark. Are we putting too much expectations on Brandon Clark? I mean, I've seen a lot of people that we asked this question of who maybe the sixth man will be, and I have heard a lot of Brandon Clark. Is that too much expectation for Brandon Clark, or what? You know, what does he look like this year?
Yeah, I don't know if it's too much expectation, just because this isn't a team that you're expecting to win a lot of games. Like,
right,
this year is about finding out, like, you know, you obviously Ja and Jaren are the centerpieces, but it's honestly like whether they win 22 games or 28 games or 35 games, what you want out of this season is to come out of it thinking, okay, who else do we have besides Ja and Jaren who we can build around? And so the more you can play Brandon Clark, the better, because you want to figure out, is he a guy long-term who's going to be part of, you know, a starter or a rotation player? And the same goes for Dylan Brooks. The same goes for Grayson Allen. The same goes for De'Anthony Melton. And, you know, if Josh Jackson makes the roster, like, you want to figure out which of these guys, these young guys that they have on the roster, are going to be guys you can depend on long-term. And so to me, Brandon Clark should be the sixth man. You want him playing a lot to see if he's good enough, if you will. And I think he is, but there's, you know, this is not about figuring out the best lineups to win necessarily. It's figuring out the best line. It's figuring out over the course of the year, who is it that we can depend on beyond this season? Because this season, the wins and losses, as we, you know, it's weird to say because, you know, the Grizzlies have been trying to make the playoffs for so long, but this is not about winning games. It's about winning long-term. And winning long-term involves accumulating assets, if you will, but guys who you know are going to be contributors when you're actually trying to win games. And
right.
So, you know, to me, yeah, I think Brandon Clark should be the sixth man. It, you know, if he turns out to be, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to start just because you've got Jaren and Jonas, but if it turns out he's better at closing games, which I suspect might be the case in a lot of games, you know, like Jonas won't close games because defensively he's a liability. Like, yes, do that, because I think, you know, it's much more likely 3 years from now you have a front court of Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson than you have a front court involving Jonas and Allen Jr. And so you want to work out the kinks now out of the spotlight and figure out what these guys can do.
Getting better should be the name of the game this year. Coming up next, we will talk about starting lineup, depth chart, and win totals with Mark Giannotto. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of the show, we always ask the same question to everybody, Mark. Give us your starting lineup, maybe a few guys off the bench. I think it's been the same for everybody. Save for a couple players, two or three spots that have been fluctuating. But give us your depth chart for the Grizzlies on opening night.
Yeah, well, obviously Ja. I think Ja, Jaren, and Jonas are guaranteed to be in the starting lineup. As your 1, 4, and 5, if you will. And then at the 2, I'm going to say Dylan Brooks for now, just because they've invested so much in him, not monetarily, but just like, you know, last year they were so high on him, they wouldn't trade him. And they need to see whether he's, you know, he fits into this picture long term. So I think he gets the chance to show that particularly early in the season. So I'd say Dylan Brooks at the 2, and then probably Jay Crowder at the 3, just so you have some more experience in there, and you probably want to showcase him, you know, because he's probably your most tradable asset outside of Andre Iguodala.
Right.
Now, Iguodala is a wild card. If he decides he wants to show up for camp, I could see him starting at the 3. And then off the bench, we mentioned Brandon Clark. I think he's going to have a big role on this team. Tyus Jones. And I'm not sure about Grayson Allen. I would say probably D'Anthony Melton as your top three guys off the bench, if you will.
Yeah, that's interesting. We didn't talk about Grayson Allen much just because we didn't have the time to get to him. But he's an interesting player. I think might have a chance to probably get waived before anything else. He's a knucklehead, so it just really depends on him.
You give him some playing time, though, because, again, you want to figure out if you have anything.
Yeah, and that's the kind of a running theme with all these players, like you mentioned. Just seeing what you have in these guys. A lot of decisions have to be made on, you know, Grayson, Josh. Like, they all a lot of options. You know, Dylan Brooks, the restricted free agent, got to extend the qualifying offer. So, like, you know, you got to see what you have. Last thing, and I'll get you out of here. Vegas line is at 27.5 for the Grizzlies for wins. I think I had them at 21 wins or something, 20 wins. It's probably a little low, but where do you stand on how many wins they get this year?
I'm going to be a little optimistic. Last year's team won 32 games, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound right?
Yeah, 32 games, yep.
Yeah, I'm going to say this team wins 30. I'm going to say they go a little bit over. By the end of the year, my hope for this team is they are last year's Hawks. And I think the Hawks won 35, but they're in the Eastern Conference, so it's a little easier. My hope is we come out of this season thinking about the Grizzlies like people thought about the Hawks last year, where they've got this intriguing young nucleus and you're beginning to wonder, you know, is this team, you know, ready to make another leap the following year. So I'm hoping, I feel this good, there's some good mojo going from this off season, whether it was the Summer League Championship, all the moves this front office made. It just seems like, it feels like, even though that they'll probably win fewer games than last year, I feel like we're due for a Grizzlies season where we come out feeling good about the future of the franchise, and we haven't been able to do that the past few years.
Absolutely, yeah. Get better, like you said, get better. Have fun should be the name of the game for the Grizzlies. Thank you, Mark. Mark Giannotto, again, if you're not already reading his stuff over the commercial appeal, make sure you go and do so. You can also catch him every single day. Giannotto and Jeffrey, 92 on ESPN, 2 to 4 every single day right here in Memphis. Mark, I appreciate it, man.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks.